Morning.
Oh. Wait, what?
You have it? Okay. I made three copies, just in case you don't have these pages. Let me give a little bit of an introduction. Is that okay? What we...
For some of us, it's...
Yeah?
You know, it's more than an introduction.
Right. What we were speaking about is the following. If the father is out of the picture, which means that he died or she left his rishus through nisarsav and nisgarsh, in all those cases the father is out of the picture, what happens in mefuta? Shall we say, and that seems to be one opinion in the Yerushalmi, that her agreement, her consent, is equivalent to a mechila or a siluk from her rights to collect knas? Perhaps we could even go as far as to say that it's called mazik birshus, that the knas is imposed upon a mazik, but if the nizak says to the mazik, go ahead and do what you want to do, and the nizak gives permission to the mazik, that's called mazik birshus, and mazik birshus doesn't pay any damages, and therefore there's no knas. So the Man D'Omer in the Yerushalmi, we identified him as Rabbi Mona, who's of the opinion that in the case of mefuta there's no knas because the father is out of the picture, can be understood in many different ways. It can be understood as a din of siluk, in which she's removing herself from her zchus to be tovei mamon. It might work midin mechila, if we assume that there is mechila on a davar shelo bali olam, there's such a sheet in Rabbi Akiva. If we assume that this is called Masik Bershus, and that was the Ramban Shita. Now, Tosus assumes that in the case of Ba'al Bito, there too, if the father is out of the picture because he's not collecting his own knas, in the case that he was the Mefata, or alternatively, let's say a father was Ba'al Bito, and then afterwards he dies, so there was no Hamad Bedin at all. So there's Yerushalmi that asks the following question. Why is it that the Mishnah tells us later on in Masechta Ksubis that the Baal Bito, there's no Knas, is because HaRezim is Chayev Ben Nafsho, meaning Kim Levi D'Ramine? Forget about Kim Levi D'Ramine. Why not just say that since the father died, he's out of the picture, and there's no knas to the father, and therefore in a case of, let's say, mefuta, there's no knas because she's mocheles ala knas. Let's also add another element into the equation. Hopefully this will become clear as we go along. There's a sheet of Rabbi Yossi Aglili that is arsav and is garsho lesla knas, that she doesn't collect knas. Again, we accept the view of Rabbi Akiva that in Isarsav and Iskarsha she does collect knas, and she will pocket the knas for herself. So in other words, again, even if the father is let's say alive and well, right? But let's say in the case of Isarsav and Iskarsha, if that takes the father out of the picture, then in such a case, she's the only one who could collect knas. Would she collect knas? Again, we're saying that there's no knas here because of Kim Levi D'Ramine. Maybe we could come up with other reasons why there's no knas. For example, let's say we talk about a case of mefuta, and we go according to that shita, that in the case of mefuta, she gives up her rights to collect knas. That's called mechilo, a siluk. Now, the problem is that at the time of the Bi'ila, the father was alive and well, obviously. He was Baal Bita. And therefore, the Knas is now earmarked towards the father. Her Mechila will not work. If that be the case, then we need to operate and activate Kim Levi D'Ramine, which means the following. That on the one hand, at the time of the Bi'ila, the father was alive. The Knas, therefore, is earmarked towards him. And if you don't apply the principle of Kim Levi D'Ramine, then she could not be Mocheles. Why can't she be Mocheles? because the father was alive at the time of the Be'ilah. So again, if she was the Yisoma, or the Be'ilah took place after Nisarsu and Nisgarsha, then the father is out of the picture even at the time of the Be'ilah. But in the case of Baal Bito, the father was very much alive and well at the time of the Pitui, and therefore the Knas was earmarked towards him. She therefore has no ability to be Mochelas the Knas, and hence we have to come on to Kim Levi the Ramine to explain why there is no Knas. I'm just wondering if there's any way that we can...
Gentlemen, I need to keep this window open because it's so hot in here.
Okay, we'll see if we can accomplish any possible goals over here. Now, let's talk about a machlokus rishonim. Do you have page bays amongst you? Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So on the left column, before we start Chav Beis, which is our subject for today, there's a paragraph at the end that starts Umatsinu, in which he quotes Machlokas Rishonim. And he says the following, Mefuta, Yesh lo Knas, according to one opinion, she collects Knas, Kishemes Avia Kodim Hamona Bidin. What does that mean? That according to this first day in the Rishonim, before we see the Ramban, since the father was alive at the time of the Pitui, he dies before Hamad Bedin. In such a case, she collects Knas. Why? Because since the father was alive at the time of the Be'ilah, she has no right to be Mochelas the Knas, because the Knas is earmarked towards the father. So that's going to be one opinion in the Rishonim, that in such a case she would collect Knas. And again, why would she collect Knas? Let's just go over it one more time. Not because her agreement to have the Be'ilah in the case of a Futa is not a Mechila, it would be a Mechila, but she doesn't have the power of being Mocheles. Why? Because at the time of the Be'ilah, the Knas was earmarked towards the father. And even though the father died before Hamad Bedin, nevertheless, her mechila is not a mechila. So Mimanafshach, she could collect knas. She can collect knas at the time of the Be'ilah, because that knas was earmarked towards her father. She can collect knas at the time of Hamad Bedin, because she's not willing to give up on that knas, so there's no mechila. That's one opinion. The Ramban has another opinion. The Ramban says she would not collect knas in this case. Why? Kevon shemidaita avda, since she consented to this be'ilah, then there is a mechila, and that mechila will somehow be effective, even though at the time of the be'ilah it wasn't effective. And kevon shenisrokna reshus la b'misas ha'av, the father died before Hamad Bedin. Now the collection of the Knas is her collection of the Knas. Her agreement to have the Be'ilah is an effective Mechila. Whereas the other Rishonim, he identifies them as the Rosh and the Ritva, they hold that she will connect Knas in the case where the father died before Hamad Bedin. And the reason for that is because B'shas Be'ilah, when she was Mocheles, her father was alive and well, and therefore the Knas is Shayach Lo. And therefore, lo haya biyada limchol. Did the underline come out in your yet? No. So that's good. I don't have to tell you therefore to underline those words. These are the key words to understand the Rishonim, who hold that she does collect knas. Yeah. And the reason is because a mechila b'shas be'ilah is not meaningful since her father is alive at the time of the be'ilah, and it's not biyada limchol. And now when she comes to Hamad Bedin, and she has the rights to collect because her father is out, she can collect, because the Mechila at the time of the Be'ilah is not meaningful. Masha Enkin, according to the Ramban and the Ra'ah, they hold that since at the time of the Be'ilah she agreed to have this Be'ilah, even though it's before Hamad Bedin, and even though the father at that point is still alive, the Mechila is still meaningful. Why? Because of Midaita Avda. And once you have the Midaita Avda, according to the Ramban, then there's if that das is meaningful. Again, we can only find out later on that the das is meaningful, but it's enough for her to create a mechila because midaita avda. And yesterday, again, I don't want to go through the whole shaklavatari that we had yesterday about the Ramban. The Ramban assumes that if it's midaita avda, it's like a mesira in which she's being mosera says gufa, and that's called mazik birshus. So what the Ramban is basically saying over here is that the mafuta situation changes the whole nature of the be'ila, and therefore the nature of the knas. And it really depends upon what's going to happen. If the father will eventually collect that knas, if he's alive at the Amar Bedin, then the fact that she was midaita avda cannot in any way impinge on the rights of the father, because the knas from the get-go until he collects it is the father's knas, and her das to do this to participate in this pitui is not meaningful. However, in the case of nisrokna, which means that the father is out of the picture, we take him out of the picture, then the knas is only meaningful for her suffering, so to speak, her being victimized. Well, guess what? She wasn't victimized, and that's called in the Ramban's language midaita avda, and therefore hamachila is meaningful. The Ritva and the Rosh on the other hand say, what do you mean hamachila is meaningful? Huh? That machila was on the Shas Bia. The Shas Bia, the knas was earmarked to her father, and he was alive and well at that time, is therefore en bia de limchal. So we're going to try as we go along to understand on a deeper level what the nature, what the yesod of this machlokus is, as to whether or not hamachila in the case of pitui is meaningful in a case where the father was alive and well at the time of the Be'ilah. But now what we want to look at is number Chaf Beis, which you'll see on the bottom left of your page. And he says the following. He's going to offer four different approaches to answer the following ambiguity, so to speak. What's ambiguous is how do we evaluate or integrate on the one end the schus of the father, on the other end the schus of the Nara herself. And we're going to go through four different ways of understanding the mechanics of how this works. The first way, which you'll see here on the bottom of page Pei Beis, is that really Knas belongs to the Nara. I mean, she was the one who suffered this Be'ila. She was victimized, as we called it. And therefore, the only reason the father collects that knas is for an external reason. What do I mean by an external reason? That's called kol shvach ne'ureho liyavir. Basically, the schus of the knas first goes into whose rishus, according to this first approach. Anybody with me?
The father.
No. If we're learning that the chiyuv is to the bas, then really the schus to collect that knas is her schus. However, we have halacha that any monetary schus that belongs to a nara automatically accrues to the father through a different mechanics, and that's called binurea beis avia. So if you underline the third line here, the fourth line, he says, uschus ha'av ba'ali achar shezoch sahabas. Gentlemen, are you familiar at all with the concept of mishmush nachla?
Mishmush nachla.
Right. So what happens is that the morish, again, I don't know the English translation, the morish, but the one who died,
yeah,
would now be inherited by, let's call him Mr. Y. So X dies, and Mr. Y is the immediate yoresh. However, Mr. Y is dead. He died before Mr. X, but he has his yoresh. So what happens is the Yerusha goes from the original Morish all the way down to the grandson, so to speak. So the son is not alive, but had the son been alive, he would inherit his father. Now the grandson will inherit his grandfather, but the schus of the grandson is only through his father. He has no direct rights to be a Yorish. He only becomes a Yorish because of the schuyos that he has in the property of his father. His father's gone. So now basically the possessions go from the grandfather to the father. That's called Mishmush Liachar Misa. And now the grandson picks it up from his father. That's what's going on here according to this first approach. which is the stipler. This is the stipler's understanding of how onus u'mafata works. The father picks it up from his daughter. The schus of knas goes directly to the daughter. And now we have a principle called binure beis avia, that he gets all the rights that she has. Like, let's say, I always give the expression of a bird flies over her chotzer and lands in her chotzer. It's a hefker. So she's kona through her chotzer, but now the father gets ownership over it because of the principle of binure beis avia. That's going to be the first approach of four different approaches. Can we get that down? I'll give another example. You can talk about an eved, right? There's a principle called kol mash zocha eved konarabo. How does that work? Is that the eved is zocha, but then the adon, the master, has rights to his eved, so he now, as a secondary motion, so to speak, picks up possession over the object. Or we say, no, the eved is just a go-between here, and the object goes directly into the reshus of the adon. So now in this structure, in this model, what we're saying about knas, and this is a big chiddush, is that knas goes directly to the isha, and then the father is zochin that money because of the principle of kol shvach nureh liavir. That's the first approach. Now we get to the second approach, which is on page Pei Gimel. Again, he's still on the same page as far as the Iker Chiyuv is concerned. It goes directly to the Bas. And therefore, she has a right to be Tovea this Knas. Why? Because the Chiyuv is towards her because of her Pegiyah, meaning her being victimized, her loss as a result of the fact that she's no longer a Basula, now she's a Ba'ula. All this is directed towards the Isha. That's only as far as the Schus Tvia is concerned. She has the rights to sue. But who gets the money? The schus tashlumin, to collect the money from the get-go, belongs to the father. In other words, now we're taking shvach nureh liavia one step further. We're agreeing that the money really should go directly to the isha, but all she has at this point is nothing more than a schus tvia. So we want to underline the word tvia here in this, on the first line. That's the key word. So therefore, she is left with the schus tvia. However, there's another schus, and that's called the schus tashlumin. She has no rights to actually collect the knas. She only had a schus tvia. The actual collection of the knas belongs exclusively to the father from the get-go. And that's how powerful Shvach Nureh Liavir is. He, so to speak, takes over Hazchuyos. And it's not just that he collects the money that really belongs to her. So it's as if first the money goes into her Rishus, she makes a kinyan on the Knas, and then Kol Shvach Nureh, he, the father, is open. No, that's not how it works. The money is going to be paid, and the Schus to collect that money directly to the Av. She is only the one who sets up the Tvia. She has a right to say, well, there's got to be some compensation for my loss, but that compensation is directed towards the father. If I could use my own terminology, again, this is my poetry here. It's not that this is not Torah's luxury, but what I would say is the father, so to speak, owns his daughter. It's almost as if her goof is owned by him. That's what Shvach Nureh Lavir means. So that now that she has rights to collect money because of the Pegiya and the Hefsid that she suffered from, he now owns that goof. So he sort of steps into her shoes, and now he has the rights to collect any of those payments for the Hefsid that she suffered, because it's like goofo. It's like her goof is his goof. Now this second Sa'ad is attributed to none other than the Kesef Mishnah, and that's at the beginning of Hilchas Naira Basula, and there's an entire Shtikl Torah there in Chidush Reb Chaim HaLevi on the Rambam, in which he analyzes the Kesef Mishnah and he gives this explanation. However, Reb Shimon Shkop, who came a little bit after, I mean, he was a contemporary Reb Chaim, but slightly younger than Reb Chaim, he has his problem with this Reb Chaim, his objection to this Reb Chaim. So before we do the paragraph of Yeshe Dachu Tzadzeh, let us just fast forward for a moment to the third definition, which you'll see, Os Gimel. And he says the following, that not only is the father in the driver's seat as far as what we call the Schus Tashlumin, but moreover, even the Schus Tvia belongs to the father. But there are two concomitant Schusei Tvia. There's one Schus Tvia of the father, and there's another Schus Tvia of the daughter. The Schus Tvia of the daughter is a result, as we said on the top of this page, of the Pagia and the Hefsi that she suffered. However, the father, Mitzad Atzmo, because his daughter suffered this, he also has a Schus Tvia. And we now have two people each that have a Schus Tvia. As far as the collection is concerned, the father takes primary collection because of the principle of Binurel Beisavir. Then we get to the fourth definition. Ein kan shnei dinei tvir, el mikor eschus tvir hi rak shel ha'av. She doesn't have a schus tvir, but she can collect or obtain a schus tvir if and when the father is out of the picture. How is the father out of the picture? As gestarven, or alternatively, she became a bogeres, and all this happened before Hamadah Bedin. At this point, she collects the Schus Tvia, she picks up her father's Schus Tvia. And what that means is that with Bagrus, she leaves the Rishus of her father, but what she takes from the Rishus of the father is all those rights that the father had in his daughter. So his right was to collect the knas of his daughter, and now that right to collect the daughter is transferred over to the daughter herself because the father's out of the picture the moment that she becomes a bogeris or if he dies. So again, if we look at the overall picture, these four approaches, what we could say is that the first two belong to sort of one camp, the last belongs to the opposite camp, and then we have a very complex third possibility. The third possibility is almost like an integration of both camps. Meaning, the first camp is to assume that really the schuyos here belong to her, and it's only the father, Midin, Binurel Beisavir, that he comes into the picture. So it means the schus tvi is really hers. She's the one who suffered this pigia, and she therefore has a right to sue for damages. However, the actual collection power belongs to the father. And the difference between the first approach and the second approach is exactly how do we define the father's binurei beisavir rights. One way is to say it's only a collection right, meaning that whatever goes into her bank account, that he has rights to take over her bank account, so to speak, to acquire ownership over her possessions. That first approach really, in a certain sense, is a polar extreme, the opposite of the fourth approach, which is going to be that everything really accrues to the father. Now we're saying that everything really accrues to her, and she's not only Tovas, but she really has the Tashlumin belong to her. They have to pay her. The only thing is that the father actually collects that money because of Binurei Beisavir. The second approach gives Binurei Beisavir a lot more teeth, and it says that not only is he collecting the money from her, but it's more than that. He has actually the Schus Tashlumin. The money is being paid directly to him. However, the Schus itself is engendered by her. In other words, why does the father collect this knas? What's the essence of this knas? He has a schus tashlumin on this knas, but why is that so? And the answer is because she has a schus tvia, and that schus tvia, bequeaths to the father a right of schus tashlumin. But in both cases, whether you take the first approach or the second approach, the father is very much secondary. There's no really direct payment to the father. He's only picking up a tashlumin based on his status of binurei beisavir. Then we have the fourth approach. I'm skipping the third approach. And the fourth approach says no. The schus tvia and all the tashlumin really belongs to her. And he doesn't have a schus tvia. However, what happens is, in the fourth approach, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I messed up. Sorry. If you could just, be compassionate, just erase the last two lines. The fourth approach is the other extreme, to say no, that it doesn't go into the rishus of the isha. It's not her zchus tvir. It's his zchus tvir. It's almost as if as I gave the mashal, her goof is like an extension of his goof, and therefore any pagia is his pagia. That's how far we're going. And in that case, she has no zchuyos. But what happens is, and we know that she can collect knas after her father dies. At some point, she picks up any zchuyos that her father bequeathed to her with his death. When he dies, she picks up her father's zchus tvir. In the middle, so to speak, we have the third approach, in which there are two concomitant, coexisting zchusei tvir. There's his and there's hers, the father and the daughter. If you take a look at the bottom two lines on the right column, going over to the top of the left column, he has another hakira here. He wants to know, is the zchias habas midin tvia, it's only mikanu lahava, after the death of the father. So we're going according to the fourth approach, everything belongs to the father, just so with the father's death, she picks up his rights. Is that only mikanu lahava from the moment of his death, or from the moment that she became a bogeres? Oh, Dilma, is it possible l'mafreya that hazchus belongs to her retroactively? And that's the nature and the unique nature of a chiyuv knas. That the nature of the chiyuv knas is solely mitla toli; it's up in the air, and it'll only be determined later on, at the time of hamad bedin. If at the time of Hamad Bedin she is still in the rishus of her father, then we go back to the original knas and we say it was earmarked to the father from beginning, from the get-go. But if on the other hand she left the rishus of the father before Hamad Bedin, then the chiyuv is meikara based on l'mafreya, that of the isha. The chiyuv is directed towards the isha. So what we're saying is that even in the fourth approach, which in the most extreme way puts it all into the father's, the ball is into the father's court, but nevertheless it still is a din that when the father leaves and exits from the picture because he dies or she became a bogeres, at that point she takes over that knas. The question is that operating l'mafreya? So that if we operate here l'mafreya, we're coming very much closer to the first two approaches that we suggested, that she does have rights to this knas. She doesn't have rights to this knas until Hamad Bedin, if and when the father is out of the picture before Hamad Bedin, but then from the Hamad Bedin and on, it works l'mafreya, and we go back to the time of the Be'ilu itself. Okay.
Well, what about his yorshim, other than the God? Why they might claim that he got this knas and it goes to them when he dies.
So the answer to that point is that no other yorshim have rights to this knas other than she, because basically the father was collecting from her goof. So the money here is a translation of her goof. You understand what I mean? If her goof is producing something, then the father may have rights to that goof, but once the father dies, now the rights go back to the goof itself,
so
meaning to the original goof.
They're shared.
Yeah. Now, the question is, how is this going to impact on the Machlokas Rishonim that we started with? Let's go back and review the Machlokas Rishonim, which was on Pei Beis in the paragraph Matsinu. And we were talking about a machlokas between the Ramban and the Ra'ah on one side of the equation and the Ritva and the Rosh on the other side. And the issue is, what happens in the case of a Yesoma Mefuta? So the father dies before Hamad Bedin. He was alive and well at the time of the Be'ila. The Ritva says that since he was alive and well at the time of the Be'ila, therefore the Knas was earmarked towards the father. And her mechila, by consenting to this pitui, is absolutely meaningless. It's ineffective, because the isha, meaning the bas herself, has no rights to this knas. However, the Ramban says that no, the mechila of the pitui, b'shas pitui, is a meaningful, effective pitui which we recognize. That's called midaita avda, despite the fact that the father is still alive. Now, obviously, the Ritva has the upper hand over here. His logic is very compelling. How could she be mocheles because of her by virtue of her consent on money that doesn't belong to her? The money is earmarked towards the father. So we begin to see the forest from the trees, how all these different definitions, the four possibilities, are going to play a role. He says the following. Let's explain the machlokus rishonim im yesh lemefuta knas kishabagra omeis ha'av kodem amonu bedin. Haderech harishona, we said that the schus of the father is not an independent schus. He's only picking up the money that's in her bank account. She's the whole, shall we say, she's the balabas. She's in the driver's seat as far as knas is concerned. The schus av beknas eino mikoach habas. Just one second. Haderech harishona. I think he's changing the numbers on me here. That's what I'm getting a little thrown off. Just one second. Well, let me try to explain it the way I understand it, and then we'll see if the words will back me up. Is that okay? What I want to suggest is the following. If you go with the fourth approach, that basically the knas belongs to him exclusively, then we begin to understand the Ritva. The Ritva is saying that she has no rights to be mocheles on something that the father has mikoach atzmo. He's in the driver's seat. So this would explain the Ritva. If on the other hand, just one second, one more minute here. The Yasdin HaTfiyah Shalah. In other words, so the Ramban, let's take the Ramban, and I'll get back to the Ritva and I'll repeat what we said in the Ritva. I think the Ritva is the easiest here, but let's get something a little bit more sophisticated, the Ramban. The Ramban recognizes her mechila. The Ramban, therefore, must be recognizing her zchus at the time of the Be'ila. So what happens is, let's take the third approach, there are two concomitant zchuyos. There's the father's zchus, and there's her zchus. Now the father's zchus is not going to materialize because he died before the Amar Bedin. What we're left with is that concomitant coexisting zchus that she has. Says the Ramban, that zchus she was mocheles on at the time of the Be'ila. So you see where the Ramban fits in beautifully with the third approach. That's what he says here in the next paragraph, which is the last paragraph on page Pei Gimel. He says, Ramban, etc., Svir Lahu, the Had Mahani Mechila be Yisoma Mefuta. In other words, how is it that her Mechila is operative, even though the father is alive and well at the time of the Be'ila? Is Afal Pi, Sha'av Chai B'Shas Habia, but nevertheless, Es Dina Tvishla Kfar Machla B'Shas Bia, she already was mocheles on her din tviya. So it means that her din tviya was coexisted with his din tviya. The afshalo hoyel din tviya b'shas bia v'uchal rak li'achas shepoka koach ha'av mikom kon din siluk o mazik b'shus goreim. So he gets a little bit complicated here, but you'll look it over when you get a chance. I'm just gonna take the third approach. Right, let's just reread the third approach. Yeshuch alechem din tfiya. Labas mitzad apgiya. Uli av mitzad atzmo. Sha'ansu pitu as bito. So each one has a tfiya on this knas. Again, who's going to win what's that game that we used to play?
Grab bag
when they, you know, you put two people with a little piece in the middle and then they have to run and see who gets it first. You know what I'm talking about? Snatch the bag, I think we used to call it, or something like. So who's going to win in the snatch the bag competition? The answer is the father's going to win because of his power of Binurei Beisavir, but she likewise, simultaneous with him, has rights to her pegia to be tovas her knas.
Her own rights.
Her own rights. Not comes sure. along the Ramban and he says, well, as far as his rights is concerned, well, that tefillah is never going to come to fruition because, unfortunately, he died before Amar Bedin. But now she has rights to be Tovas. And the answer is, says the Ramban, well, she was already Mochelis on those rights because she had those rights at the time of the Be'ila, and she consented to the Be'ila. But on the other hand, the Ritva is going to argue that the fourth approach, that there's only one Ikar Zchus Tvia V'Yishel Ha'av, and if the only Zchus Tvia is of the father, she has to inherit that with her father's death. Well, I have news for you, that father's Zchus Tvia never materialized, so therefore she has no ability to over one more time. The Ritva says that Hamachila is meaningless. Why is it meaningless? Because Bishas Biyahaya Avia Kayam Vaknas Shayach Lo. Right? So that's the fourth approach that we said over here. That the Knas really is his Knas. Oh, so if it's his Knas, Hamachila is out of the question. And that's the Ritva Shita. Oh, now the father dies. And what happens at the moment of the father's death? His chus tfiyah now is inherited by her. And now she can go ahead and collect that knas at the time of Hamad Abedin. So that basically what we have here is that the Ritva, and here's the paradox, is going to disqualify her ability to be Mocheles, which sounds like he's putting her down, and yet the logical outcome is that she can collect this Knas, correct? Because if her Mechila is not a valid Mechila, and we're saying that because it's the whole Pagia here, so to speak, the father's Pagia, that's the last of the four possibilities over the Tefillah is that of the father, then paradoxically she has a right to collect that Knas Dafka because the Tefillah belongs to her father. Why? Because her Mechila at the time that her father was alive is a meaningless Mechila insofar as she has no Zchus Tefillah whatsoever. So her Mechila is not going to be Chal on anything. She has no Zchus Tefillah. What happens to the Zchus Tefillah of the father? So at the moment of his death, she inherits that Zchus Tefillah because again, the father's rights to this Knas were based on the fact that there is a what do we call it? A pagia in the goof of the isha, which the father suffers that pagia. But if the father's collecting that pagia or the knas for that pagia during his lifetime, once he dies, then if he's collecting the schus pagia in her body, that schus pagia now is bequeathed or is inherited, shall we say, by the bas, so she can collect the knas. The Ramban on the other hand says no, she was already mochelis because at the time of the be'ila she had an equal right to be tovas the knas, and she was already mochelis on that right to collect the knas.
It seems like the word mechila is being used in two different meanings. One has to do with the fact that she consented to the Be'ila, and that is an implicit Mechila. And then it also says, Lo haya biyada limchol. That's not referring to the Be'ila, that's referring to some sort of a statement of Mechila afterwards when the Knas might be collected.
If you're talking about the Ritva now? Let's go back to the Ritva. The Ritva is the bottom paragraph of Umatsinu. Yes?
Yes, right. I'm right there.
So he means that Kevin Shabashas Bia Hoya Via Kayam, in such a case, which is the normal classic case of Mafata, Lo Hoya Bia the Limcho, meaning at the time of the Be'ila, she doesn't have the power to be Mochel.
Oh, what she did is not tantamount to Mechila.
Well, you can call it a Mechila, but halachically it doesn't register as a Mechila. Do you follow what I mean? You could agree that she really gave up on her rights to collect that knas, but on the other hand, she didn't have any rights to begin with. So the Mechila can't be Chal on anything. It becomes like a Dovah Shalom Oliola.
And that's what he means when he says Lo haya biyada limchol. It's just not. It's not shayach.
Correct. She has no schus, and if you take that and you attach it to number dalit on the very next page, where you see those words mikara Tzchus Tviya Hi Shalav. Yeah, it should say Rak Shalav. That means that she didn't have a Tzchus Tviya. So her Mechila at the time of the Be'ilah cannot be Chal on anything because she didn't have any Tzchuyot. All the only person in the world who had Tzchuyot is the Tzchus Tviya is that of the father. She can't be Mochelis to the father, hence I have the Ritva. Again, you have to add another point to the another element into the equation, and that is when the father dies, she now picks up the zchus tviya of the father. Hence, there will be a payment of knas to her. But now we go to the Ramban sheet, and the Ramban sheet says that there is mechila at the time of the be'ilah. Her consent is a mechila, and that mechila is valid. How could that mechila be valid unless she has a zchus? So that's where we're going to go back to the first and the second approaches, which, if you recall, this father only picks up from the schus of the bas, but the schus is really hers. There's no such halacha that the guf of the isha belongs to the father. That's not true. It's her guf. She's a nara. She has a right to get paid. But there's only a problem, a secondary problem, like the mishmash nachla problem, and that is that the father has chuyos through the mechanism of kol shvach neurali avia. So if we go with that approach, and for that matter, in number Beis, which is on the top of Pei Gimel, there's a similar idea where she has the schus tviya, but just that the father collects based on that schus tviya. Then we can understand the Ritva. I'm sorry, the Ramban. The Ramban is saying that she could be Mochelis. And why could she be Mochelis? Because it's her schus, according to the first Pshat, even to collect the knas, just that once she collects it, it goes in reverse into the bank account of the father. Or, according to the second approach, that the schus tviya is exclusively her schus tviya. The father only has schus tashlumin, but the schus tviya is hers. Well, she was Mochelis, says the Ramban. And that's what the Ramban calls midaita avda. So at this point, Rabosai, we want to turn to page Pei Dalet. I think you have Pei Dalet, am I right?
Yes, I have.
And he writes the following. This is number Chav Dalet. He says, "Vayderech hashnia der Ramban v'ritva sfirlehu didin atfiyah hu shalabas." Right, this was the second approach, which is on the very top of the previous page, Pei Gimel. Ve'av rak zocher b'tashlumin meikara midin shvach neurim. So shvach neurim means that he gets the tashlumin from the time of the bia. It's already earmarked to him, but that's all based on her zchus tviya.
Yeah.
And if there's no zchus tviya, he can't collect with the zchus tashlumin. Hence, the mechila according to Ramban is going to be meaningful. So he says the following. I'm sorry, I lost the place here. V'ya'av zocher b'tashlumin mikara midin shvach. Ella sheyesh lo zchus b'gufa. Right, so what does it mean that he has zchus tashlumin? It means he has zchus in her guf. Le'in tashlumei aknas u'boshes u'pagam. V'lachein lo mahani mechilasa. Or this according to the Ritva.
Yeah.
Bechayavia, the Ela Rishus Limsar Gufa, Velo Chashivi Mazik Birishus.
So that's like Mazik Birishus doesn't count because she doesn't have that power to consent.
I would say it a little bit differently. I would say the following, that according to the Ritva, the reason why her Mechila is meaningless is because even though she has a schus tviya and the father is only zocher b'tashlumim midin shvach neurim, but in addition to schus tashlumim, you have to ask why did the Torah give him the schus tashlumim? And what we're suggesting is that it's not just a din that whatever goes into her bank account automatically goes into his bank account. You know, it's like a little bit like a joint account, but the only thing is that one of the two members of the partnership has the superior status. Like, you know, for a minor, like if you have El Sheyesh lo zchus begufa, right? He has a zchus in her guf. And we saw that in, if you remember in the second approach, it's a schus begufa, and that gives him rights to the tashlumin. Remember, we said he's the baal habos in terms of tashlumin by virtue of binu rebbe savir. But we say not binu rebbe savir that it goes into her account and then into his, but binu rebbe savir means it's her goof is his goof. Is according to that the Ritva says lachem lo mahani mechilasa, right? Because at the time the Be'ilah Haguf is considered owned, so to speak, as far as monetary law by the father, and it's similar to Dmei Vlados, if you remember that we touched upon. So this is going to be the explanation for the Ritva. Now, at this point, he introduces a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid in Perek Reis Mehilchus Naira Besua Halacha Yud Gimel. And this has to do with Moda B'miksas. Okay. Now, the issue here is about what we call Boshes Upagam. What happens is, in the case of Ones, in addition to the Knas, there's also a lawsuit about Boshes Upagam. So let's say, for example, she comes into Beis Din, points her accusing finger at so-and-so, and says, Anastoti, and instead of denying the Ones, which would have mean that he's parted from A, B, and C, if he would have denied the whole story, A meaning the Knas, B meaning Boshes, and C meaning Pagam. Instead, he was Moda B'miksas. And he says to her, Anastoti, that scratch that out. She's saying Anastoti. His response was, Pititi Osach, meaning there's no Chiv of Boshes of Pagam, but I do have to pay the Knas. So by his own admission, he's the one. You don't need two Adam to testify that he was the one who did this Be'ilah. The question was, did she give consent or not? He's claiming that she gave consent. She denies it. So according to her denial, it was a case of Ones. And as a result, he has to pay not only Knas, but also Boshes Upagam. However, his counterclaim was Pititi Osach, which means that there's no collection of Boshes Upagam, there's only a collection of Pitui. That's called Moda B'miksas, is it not? Says the Rambam, in such a case he has to take a Shvua D'oraisa Moda B'miksas, based on the Tfiyah the Bas. Again, she was demanding A, B plus C, he admits to A plus B, but he denies C. Or actually, he admits to A and denies B and C, meaning Boshes and Pagam. And the Rabbi says, no, there's no Shvua. Why is there no Shvua? And the answer is, Lufishenka Tover. So again, we're talking about a case where the father is out of the picture, and the Rabbi says that she cannot be Tover. So let's explain. The Rambam holds that the din tfiyah is of the bas, and the father only has rights to what? To tashlumin. Therefore, she is the tovea, and if she's the tovea, saying anastoti, and he admits patiti, that's a modem miksas. But the Rambam holds that the din tfiyah is the father's tfiyah, like we said in the fourth explanation. V'lachin einun echsheves tovea calls man shaknas. Shayach la'av. So do you see that in the fourth approach, the Ravid is absolutely correct? There's no way that you can generate a chiyuv shvua here because there's no tovea. Right? Mimarashach, there's no tovea. The father is gone, and she can't be tovea because she never had a schus tvia to begin with. Right, the father was the one who had the schus tvia. It's not like the Rambam she did that. No, the father has rights only in tashlumin, but the schus tvia is hers. We're going now like the next approach. This is going to be the Ravid shita that the tvia is the father's tvia.
The father's tvia.
Right, again, you have to reiterate the fourth approach on the previous page, right? Ein kan shnei dini tviya, el mei karz chus ha-tviya shel ha'av. So the father is the exclusive bailim over the chus tviya. And if so, if he's out of the picture, she cannot be a tovas. And if she's not going to be a tovas, then there's no shvuas modu mixas, because every shvua, no matter what the shvua, is predicated on a tviya.
Yeah.
So this is a very exciting piece that we want to add to the equation. Now he has another machlokas around in the writing. This is in Perek Beis Naira Besula, but it's in Halacha Yud Zayin. So we're fast forwarding five halachas. The Rambam writes the following: Hiniach ha'av bito ha'besula mucheres liznus lemisha yom olev. This is what yesterday we were talking about kedesha.
Yeah.
This is a kind of kedesha situation. So what happens? The father does not supervise his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Go out and you're hefker." In such a case, the Rambam claims, Eina boel chayev b'knas. And the Rambam is going to say one of two things. We don't know what he's saying. Either he's saying loka mishal, that there's no din of loka mishal, hence there's no knas. Or he's saying that the Torah never obligated someone to pay a knas for a kedesha. The Ravid says that the reason why there's no knas in this situation is v'od shegam hu mefuta u'idaita osa. That in terms of the father's rights to collect knas, he becomes a mefuta.
The father.
Uh-huh. The father himself becomes a mefuta, which means that he himself is mochel the knas. Because he told his daughter that you can live a loose life, and once he says that to her, then at that point he gives up his knas. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he's basically saying, I'm not going to hold anyone at fault.
Midaita osa.
Exactly. It's the other midaita of the isha that now applies to the father, and the Rambam has this new chiddush that if it's of do midaito, that's enough to remove the knas. Fine. Now the rabbi doesn't disagree with the Rambam as far as the final halach is concerned, but as far as the logic is concerned, and he says v'od the gam hu mefuta umidaito osa. Forget about the situation of her agreement to have the pitui. Leave that out of the picture. Because again, the Ravid sheet himself is that she doesn't have any schus tviya. It's exclusively the schus tviya of the father.
So he's responsible.
Oh, now he's responsible. And he's the one who wants to make a tviya, says the Ravid, gam humafuta. He was already mochel on his rights of tviya. So you don't need the Rambam's reasoning that the Torah never said you have to make knas to a kedesha. There's no knas to a kedesha. Right? In other words, the Torah through the parasha of knas wants to, if we can say it in philosophical terms, wants to protect taras yisrael, the purity of a Jewish girl. But in the case of a kedesha, the Torah is not interested in protecting the integrity and the purity of a Jewish girl because she's already a kedesha. That's the Rambam's new shita as to why you don't pay knas in this case of hiniach abito absula liznos. But even beyond that, if we assume that the father is now being mochel the knas, says the Ravid, I have a more simple and straightforward understanding why there's no knas. I don't have to come on to this new din that a kedesha, the Torah never gave knas to a kedesha because she doesn't have the purity that the Torah wants to protect. Forget about all that. Says the Rabbi, just operate within the principles that we know. We have a principle of midaita, when she agrees. And then we have a principle of midaito, that he's given up her guf for znus, and he's not interested in anybody paying him any penalties for being mezana with his daughter. So that machil itself is a justification as to why there's no knas here. Not because of the Rambam's new din that there was never, the Torah never had an interest in protecting, in giving a knas to a kadesha. Fair, she's a kadesha. No, leave that all out. That's too sophisticated. Simply say that he's a mochel on the knas, because his rights to the knas is based on gufa, and he's saying, I'm giving up on gufa. Let her be a mucheness lesnus. If that be the case, you've given up on your rights of collect, for your rights to collect to collect the knas.
Would he go so far as to say that any time this happens, that the av is implicitly responsible, because if she went out like this, then that means that he didn't do his job?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, to what extent does the father have to lock up his daughter, who's a naira, with locking keys?
What she does reflects back on him directly.
But here, just to give you the extreme case that we're dealing with in the Rambam's frame of reference, he said, you know what? Ani meniach osach lios mucheness lesnus l'kol mishiyom olayach. You know, that was an explicit declaration
explicit.
That he's not interested in her purity.
Only then do we say all this.
Right. You know, it's so strange because in the Gemara's frame of reference, and now we're dealing with the Doraisa halacha, who would imagine such a thing, like the Chas V'Shalom, that could occur? But today, in our, you know, Fakrumta contemporary society, This is not far from reality. There are fathers who would say to their daughters, just go out and do what you want, you know. Oh, so what's the machlok between the Rambam and the Raifu? Next paragraph. L'fima should aspire yeshlom da Rambam s'vila de'ikra fiyavul abas. Right, this was the Rambam Shita that we saw earlier, that the Rambam holds that she could be tovea in a mode of mixas case. She's taking onus and he's admitting to pitur. So if she has the schus, then the father's agreement that his daughter can be a kadesha is totally irrelevant, because ein la'avel eschus mamon greater. Although the father does have schus to collect tashlume knas, that is true. But if you ask where did he pick up this schus to collect the tashlume and the knas, it's because of her rights, and the ikar chiyuv is to her. And I'll prove it to you from the fact that Rambam says that she, even when there's no father, she can be tovea a mode of a mix of shvua. Is nimsa shein lavel is chus mamon, but the original chus on this knas is really her chus. Hence, she can be tovas. And the mela, therefore, heifesh and bugger kodem amod b'din sulo mahani mechila. So, right, his mechila is meaningless.
What is this mechila exactly? What does that mean?
Remember, the Ravid had this concept that when the father says, he makes this declaration, go out and live a free life.
Right.
Right? So we said that that's like midaito of the, right? And that's kind of a mechila. But according to the Rambam Shita, he doesn't have the rights to be mochel. And the reason for that is because she has an independent schus, and the fundamental schus is her schus. Now, Bagra, she's already out of his rishus at the time of Amad Abedin, so his mechila is meaningless because he's already outside of the purview here. Ella, what are you going to say that when she, at the time of the original Be'ila, there was a mechila on his part? So the answer is, his mechila has no right to knock her out of the rights to collect that knas. And she had rights to collect the knas from the get-go, from the time of the Be'ila. But the Ravid, on the other hand, holds that the father is the bailim on the tviya, and hence, when the father says mafkir his daughter, he's basically being mochel on that tviya. Mevela mefila sa'av nechshevas ki'ilu mazik b'rshus. Okay, he introduces again the concept of mazik b'rshus, where basically the father is inviting the ma'anis or the mafata to do what he has to do, and by inviting him, that's called the mazik b'rshus. But that's all because her goof is considered his goof. And the reason for that is because the Ravid holds that when it comes to knas, he, the father, is in the driver's seat. That's why the Ravid previously had excluded Hotvia to generate a Modem Mitzvah Shmur. Ah, so if he's in the driver's seat, and then he says to somebody, you have my Rishus to be Mazik, my daughter, if you follow, then it's Mazik Rishus, and he can't collect any damages. Hence the Rambam holds, and the Ravid holds that there's no collection of Knas in this case. This is a pretty neat package. So I want to now talk to you about page Kuf Chav Gimel, which we gave out yesterday. So let's just make a note where we got up to here, basically up to Os Chav Hei. You know what, we'll just read the last paragraph. He says, Yushalmi Mufurish Lehejik Moshe Nisparah B'das Rav Sheyumamid HaMishnah Da'aval Bitok Shemes Av Kodim Amad B'din Mishmachi Ilav Dekim Le'imam Yodim Ischai B'knas Le'bito. So this would support the Rambam, who says, just one second, that he's in the driver's seat, and therefore Baal Bito would be a Knas. Do you follow the logic of this paragraph? Should we go over that one more time?
Yerushalmi. Yeah, I don't get it.
He's saying something very brilliant. The Rambam Shita is that the father's in the driver's seat, and in the case of what we call Kadesha, his mechila is meaningful. I'm sorry. Nochamo. The Rambam says that there's no knas to a Kadesha. And the Ravid says, well, he's mochel. And the Ravid, we say, is based on the assumption that the tviya of Knas is the father's tviya. It's not her tviya, but it's the father's tviya. And therefore, if midaita Ovid and he's making her into a Kadesh, the Rambam on the other hand holds no. That basically the father's rights come through the daughter. So he says the following. In the case of Baal Bito, and the father dies before Amar Bedin, we must come on to Kimla the Rabbin and knock off the Knas. Because even though Bishas Bia, the Knas was Shaykh to the father, and he was Mochel because it was Baal Bito, but Liachar Misoso, Lo Mahani Mechila. So you want to underline those words, Liachar Misoso, Lo Mahani Mechiloso. In other words, the Rambam Shita is that the Knas is hers. Right, primarily it's hers. That's how the Rambam had the modem mikzas that we spoke about before. And now what happens is the father dies. If the father dies, then he's out of the picture as far as collecting the knas. So what are you going to tell me, that he had a mechila on the knas because he was Baal Bito? Well, his mechila can't work now because he's dead. And now she has rights to collect the knas. Okay. So let's just make a note that we're up to Chaf Hei. But I want to get back to the sugya of Rav Nechunya ben Akana that we began yesterday, and that's on page Kuf Chaf Gimel. And we're up to Kuf Hei, which was the last thing that we discussed yesterday.
Got it.
You have it?
Yeah.
Everybody has Kuf Chaf Gimel? I think we gave it out.
Yeah, I have it.
I don't know, Jeff, maybe you don't have it?
I have.
You do have it. Excellent.
It was in the archives.
Okay, great. Yeah. So let's go over the Gemara very quickly. The Gemara says that there are two ways of understanding Rav Nechunya ben Akana and his source. Rav Nechunya ben Akana says that Achiyuv Kareis knocks off Tashlume Momen. And according to Abai, that's based on the word Asson. According to Rava, that's based on the parish of Molech, where the Torah says and God declares that my Misa will substitute for your Misa. My Kares will be, in other words, if you don't mete out the punishment of Misa, God says, I will do so. And therefore Kares, which is a Misa Midei Shamayim situation, is exactly like and has the same status as Misa's Bez. Okay? So the Gemara asks, my Beinai, what's the difference between Abai's understanding and Rava's understanding? And the Gemara is going to say Ikabenayu Zar Sha'ochal Truma, because Zar Sha'ochal Truma doesn't get that that very severe punishment of Kares. He's Chayav Misa B'Dei Shemayim. Let's say Kares is before 50, Misa B'Dei Shemayim is before 60, and therefore, if you're going with the Shita if you're going with the Shita of Rava, so Rava says that Kares replaces Misa B'Dei Adam, right? Misa's Bezi. But we don't know anything about Misa B'Dei Shamayim, but according to Abaye, the word Asod means any punishment that's meted out up in Shamayim is then Zar Shafal Truma would be potter. Let me just make sure I didn't mislead you. Open up the Gemara. That's always a good idea, right? To open up the Gemara. And let's see. Ika Beinayu. Okay. So we're on page Lamed Amid Beis. Just 1 second. Lamed Amid Beis Ika Beinayu. So it's about, I would say, maybe 10 lines down from the top of the page, and more than that, even 15 lines. Ika Beinayu Zar Sha'ochal Truma. Labai Potter, right? Because this also comes on, this Misa B'Dei Shemayim also is included under Asom. And that's a punishment B'Dei Shemayim, which has the same status as a punishment B'Dei Adam, hence Kim Lev the Rabbi. L'Rava Chayav, because Rava only knows that Kares is a substitute for Misa. He doesn't know that Misa B'Dei Shemayim is a substitute for Misa. Okay. All this is before the Afla. Now we want to do the Afla, which is here number on Os Kuf He. You see those words, Matzino Lememar? Oh. Now, the Torah has told us in the parasha of Hasson that Misa knocks off Tashlumei Mama. The Torah has not told us a word about Malkus. So we don't really know what would be the halacha of, let's say, Misa knocking off a chi of Malkus. If, let's say, it was an overlap of two averos, one of which generated a chi of Misa as a capital crime, the other generated a chi of Malkus, what's going to be the deal here? Do we have to give up Malkus before he dies? And the Gemara later on in Daf Lamed Zayin is going to derive from another limud, another alfusa called Kedei Rishaso, that in such a case we put him to death, but we don't give him Malkus.
Kedei Rishato Mishum Rishachat.
Right. For lo Mishum Shtei Rishayos. Okay? So in a case of Misa and Mamon, we have the pasuk of Asan. Okay, but in the case of Misa and Malkus, we need the pasuk Kedei Rishasa. Because again, we're dealing with two punishments B'Dei Adam, and we don't know if one knocks off the other. We only know that Misa will knock off Tashlumei Mamon, but we don't know that Misa will knock off Malkus. And for that, we need a special Yafusa called Kedei Rishasa. Okay, now comes along the Hafla. Enter stage Hafla. And he says the following. Would Misa B'Dei Shamayim Patra Malkus? And he says the following. According to Abaye, we have no basis for that. Why? Because Abai never taught us anything about Misa B'Dei Shamayim. Abai only taught us about Ason, and Ason is a parasha to knock off a Chiv Mamon. We need a special parasha to knock off Malkus. So we don't know that Misa B'Dei Shamayim would knock off Malkus. According to Rav, it's very good, because Rav equates Misa B'Dei Shamayim with Misa's Bezdin. And then we're going to apply the principle of Kedei Risha, so you can't be Mechayv two punishments for the same action, for the same crime. Again, they're two crimes, but one action. So why didn't the Gemara give this example as a nafkamina between Abaye and Rava? Would there be a din of Ptur Malkus in the case of Misa V'dei Shamayim? And the answer is that according to Rava, yes; according to Abaye, no. Okay, now where is the shogig business? Just 1 second. Oh, so that was my finish. Okay, fine. So we're on the top left column here, the ulam. And he says the following. Yesh omrim dekares o misa b'dei shamayim eina poteres mi malkus l'kuli alma. He says the gam b'misas bezdin yesh chiluk ben misa u'mamon ben misa u'malkus. In other words, this halach of Kedei Rishaso is completely from A to Z, is addressing Bezdin. So if Bezdin is going to put this person to death, the Kedei Rishaso tells me they will not add another punishment to boot, namely Malkus. But in a case of an Onesh Bidei Shamayim, that could not potter up Malkus, according to anybody, based on Kedei Rishasa. And the reason for that is because we're not addressing Bezdin anymore. Kedei Rishasa addresses Bezdin, and it restricts Bezdin to one punishment and doesn't allow them to institute two punishments. But in the case of Misa V'dei Shamayim, where Bezdin is only going to institute one punishment, they, namely Malkus, then everybody agrees that he's going to be Chayav of Malkus. There's no way he can knock off the Chayav of Malkus. He says, Hamisa Atzma Poteres, Masheke Misa U Malkus. In the case of Mammon, it's Misa that generates the Ptur. So it doesn't matter whether the Misa is Bidei Shamayim or it's a Misa Bidei Adam. But in the case of Misa Malkus, which is derived from Kedei Rishasa, that's a whole different mechanism. There, the mechanics is that it's the Misa itself, as implemented by Bezdin, that's going to potter you up from Malkus. And if it's a din al Bezdin, that Bezdin cannot be Mechayev two punishments, that doesn't apply to the case of Misa Bidei Shamayim.
The Shemayim has the capability of doing both, right? The only
yes and no. I mean, I don't know if you're saying both, but what happens is there's like a partnership here. The Bezdin Shemayim will institute Misa, and Bezdin Shelmata is going to introduce Malkus. Why? Because Bezdin is obligated to give Malkus to a criminal who deserves Malkus. What are you going to tell me? Well, there's a Misa V'dei Shamayim. That doesn't mean Kedei Rishasa. That doesn't generate Kedei Rishasa, because Kedei Rishasa is a din on Bezdin. Now, I wanted to suggest that maybe we have to introduce another issue over here, and that's the issue of Shogeg. So you take a look at Kuf Vav. You have Kuf Vav? Now, be ready for this. Like, tie yourself down to the chair, because this is very profound. But I honestly believe that if we can get by this next paragraph, well, what's the matter, Yosef?
Yeah, no, that's right. I didn't.
Right, we're up to Kuf Vav on page Kuf Chaf Gimel.
Yeah, got it.
If we can get by this paragraph, I really believe we can give ourselves a pat in the back that we have a grasp on the whole mechanics of Kim Levi the Rabbi. And he says the following. We have a sugya in Chulin which records a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about shogigin. And the problem is the following, that on the one hand, he did an avera b'mezid, he got asra, and that avera requires malchus. On the other hand, At the same time, he violated a chiyuv misa, but there was no hasra for the chiyuv misa. So as far as the chiyuv misa is concerned, he's called a shogeg. So let's say, for example, he's aware of one avera, he's not aware of the other avera. So he's not aware of the avera that generates a chiyuv misa, a chiyuv misa, right? That he's not aware of. So as far as the chiyuv misa is concerned, his gedder, his definition, his category is shogeg. As far as the chiyuv malchus is concerned, there was edim, hasra, he's a full-fledged mazid, and he should get malchus. Does the chiyuv misa b'shogeg have the power to knock off the punishment of malchus? Well, according to everything what we've said until now, what's the answer to that question? Would the misa knock off the malchus?
No,
because there isn't. Because Beis Din is not implementing two punishments. Because Beis Din can't punish him with a chiyuv misa if he was a shogeg. But guess what? There's a machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about this very problem. Everything that we've said until now reflects the shita of Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish holds that Chayve Mises Shogegin is... Just one second. That Chayve Mises Shogegin... No, I'm sorry. Everything that we said reflects the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Let me get the names right. You know, I'm very bad at getting names right. So let's try to get it right here, because it's going to be very important to get the names right. Everything that we've said reflects the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan holds that chayve misos shogegin pturim chayovim b'malkus. Just one second. Oh, the Chayovim B'malkus. There it is. I missed it. On the third line. Do you see the third line? He says Chayovim B'malkus. So you want to underline those words, the Chayovim B'malkus. Now, why does that make absolute sense? Because since he was a shogeg, as far as the Chiyuv Misa is concerned, therefore he gets Malkus. There's no... You know, we can't address Beis Din and tell them to alleviate the Chiyuv Malchus. Why? Because Beis Din is not implementing any sort of Chiyuv Misa. But if you go with Reish Lakish to simulate the Chayve Misa Shogun Peturim in a Malchus, then we're going back to the Aver itself. If the Aver itself is an Averis Misa, even though the Gavra himself is parts because he's a shogeg, but the Aver that he implemented is in the realm of a Chiyuv Misa, excellent, then it knocks off the Chiyuv Malchus, says Reish Lakish. So everything depends upon the Avera, not on the way Beis Din will implement the punishment for the Avera, but on the Avera per se. So the Avera of a Chayve Misa will knock off the Chiyuv Malchus, even though Beis Din is not going to implement the Misa, because he was a shogeg. So now let's get back to our original question. And that was the case of Chayve Krisus. He incurred a Chiyuv Kares, and at the same time, he incurred a Chiyuv Malchus. So he did two Averis, one of which generates Kares, and the other Malchus. So the Aflo wanted to say that would depend on the Machlokas Abai V'Rava. And then the conclusion would be that according to Rava, he would be potter from Malchus. Right? So we're talking about a Chiyuv Misa B'dei Shamayim, or a Chiyuv Kares. In that case, according to Rava, he would be potter from Malchus. That's what we've been saying all along. And the reason for that is because the Chiyuv Misa is going to replace the Misa of Beis Din, and that's enough to knock off Malchus. Yeah, all that would make sense if you hold like Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish goes back to the Aver itself. But let's plug in Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that this entire enterprise of Kedei Rishaso is addressing Beis Din. That Beis Din can't implement two punishments. Well, that has nothing to do with Rava then. You can't say that according to Rava, who derives that Kares is a replacement for Misa, and therefore it's going to patter up Malchus. There's no Kedei Rishaso to patter up Malchus, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, the only way I can patra Malkus is if Bezdin is implementing another punishment. They are punishing him as a Bitaris Chayav Misa, because he's Chayav Misa.
The Kari would not. Because that's not our...
Correct. Because that doesn't address Bezdin.
Right.
So basically the entire premise here of the flaw would only make sense if you hold like Reish Lakish. Why? Because Reish Lakish looks at the Avera and he classifies the Avera. So for example, Reish Lakish is going to say that you don't get Malkus in the case where he simultaneously violated a fee of Misa B'Shogeg, because that Avera, if we identify and classify the Avera, it's an Avera of Misa. Even though it's not addressing Bezdin, because Bezdin is only going to implement one and only one punishment, namely Malkus. But nevertheless, we're going to waive Malkus because of the nature of the Avera as an Avera classified as a Chiv Misa. Ah, if you accept the logic of Reish Lakish, then we could say that according to Rava, who has a principle that the Misa B'Dei Shamayim is going to replace the Misa B'Dei Adam, then you could say that he would be parted from Malkus in a case where he incurred a Chiyuv Misa B'Dei Shamayim or a Chiyuv Karis B'Dei Shamayim. Because we're not addressing Bezdin, we're looking at the Avera, and we're classifying the Avera. So if the Avera generates Misa B'Dei Shamayim, let's say Zar Shachal Truma, then that Avera would pater him up from Malkus. Why? Because everything depends upon the Avera per se. And we know that Misa B'Dei Shamayim is a substitute for Misa's Bezdin. Masha'enkin, if you go with Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan holds that the entire enterprise of Kedei Rishaso addresses Bezdin, and Bezdin cannot, their hands are tied, they cannot implement two different onshim for the same Misa. So if that be the case, then in Misa B'Dei Shamayim, even Rava would agree that he's Chayav Malkus. Even Rava would agree he's Chayav Malkus. Why? Because there's no punishment bidei Adam. There's no, Bezdin is not punishing him for the Chiyuv Misa bidei Shamayim. That's all in Dei Shamayim. So there's nothing to knock off the Malkus. So this is a brilliant approach, because what he's basically saying over here in the name of the Achiezer of Chaim Oizer is that with all due respect to the flaw only makes sense if you hold like Reish Lakish. But if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan, then the whole premise, all the cards fall down. So if you see a line about 10 lines down here in this paragraph, Kuvav, he says, Alinya Malkus, he's explaining Rabbi Yochanan now, the Alfina Mikra, the Kdei Rishos, the Nalokum Mes, the Inan Shetei Arashah, the Onish Misa Mesura Lebez, the Befal. Beautiful. This is Rabbi Yochanan's the cornerstone, the foundation of Rabbi Yochanan in how he understands Gimel and Rabbi Mine, is that we're addressing Bezdin, we're telling them not to implement two different punishments. Befal. Emphasize that word Befal. So if there's a rishus of Misa, and Befal, we're going to implement that Misa, then we cannot implement Malkus. But in the case of Shogigin, Chayvei Misa Shogigin, Rabbi Yochanan would insist that since there's no Misa Befal, therefore there's nothing to knock off the Chiyuv Malkus.
Right.
And that's why in the next line he says, Aval Bechayvei Misos Shogigin, She'ein Arsha Misura LeBezdin, Ein Chiyuv Misa Poter Mimalkus. Umebela, the same thing should apply to an Onish Kares, which is Bidei Shamayim. The Eino Befal Yidei Bezdin Mamish. Therefore, in such a case where he generated a Chiyuv Kares and at the same time a Chiyuv Malkus, he will get Malkus.
Mm-hmm.
He will get Malkus. Hence, whether you go like Abaye with Hasson or you go like Rava with Molech, you're always going to come to the conclusion that in the case of Misa B'Dei Shamayim or Kares, there would be a Chiyuv of Malkus. There's nothing to knock off the Malkus, because the whole enterprise of knocking off Malkus is based on the Befal, on the Misa Befal, but there's no Misa Befal. Wow. See, if we got that, then we're doing great. Now, do you have page Kuf Chaf He?
Yes.
My Ika Bein Rava La'abaya Ikebe Na'u Zar Shachal Truma. Now, Zar Shachal Truma is a punishment of Ason bidei shamayim, but it falls short in its severity of karetz. So that, according to Rava, Rava had the parash of Molech, and in the parash of Molech, the Torah says vichrati, it's karetz. There's no room, there's no proof, therefore, to assume that achiv misa bidei shamayim would not go off tashlume moment. But according to Abaye, it's all included under asan, and therefore, it makes no difference whether it's achiv kares or achiv misa bidei shamayim. Yosef, you didn't find it?
No.
Didn't we make three copies?
Not of a day.
Not of kuf chaf hey?
No.
No? So how far did I go?
Gimel.
Up until Gimel. Okay. So look, Rabosa, we have about 5 more minutes till Mincha. If you don't mind, I'm just going to give you a little Torah Shebal Peh from the Haflah, which is here on page Kuf Chaf Hey. And if somebody would be kind enough after Mincha to photocopy Kuf Chaf Hey and Kuf Chaf Vav, or else I'll do it, then you'll be Meichel me that it's Torah Shebal Peh. Here's the deal. The Haflah wants to know, what is this truma? Where is this truma? There are two stages in truma. There's hafrasha, and then there's nesina. So we're talking about someone who's a zar, and he ate truma. Now, the moment there was hafrasha, there's truma. But we're talking about paying or not paying the kohen. So it would seem like the case that the Gemara is dealing with is a case where there already was an asina, not just a hafrasha. So the Haflah is bothered by this. Amai lo mukmini lo bizar shachol truma shehifrish vadayin lo nosan lekoin. The bazeh lo shayach lomar midagba kanya. Okay, let's try to explain. The Gemara on the one hand wanted to set up a nafkamina between Rav and Abaye when the Tzar eats the Truma, and the Gemara rejects this by saying no, he's chayef to pay the Kohen the very moment that he lifts up the Truma, even before he eats the Truma, so there's no simultaneity. Says the Haflah, forget about lifting up the Truma, let's just talk about a case of a Tzar that eats Truma after the Hafrasha. Here we don't need Hagbah in order to engender a Chiv Mamon, right? Again, we need Hagbah in the case where the Truma was already given over, it was delivered to the Kohen, and the Kohen owns the Truma. Now you lifted up his Truma for the sake of stealing it. So then the Gemara has a very good argument here that he has to pay the Kohen because already he was Chayav for Tashlume Truma from the moment of Hagbah. However, if we're talking about a case of truma before Nesina Lekoin, after the Afrasha, in such a case, we don't need to introduce the concept of Midib Agbe Kanye, that from the very moment that he lifts it up, he was Koneh. How does Haflah know this? He bases it on a Ravid in Hilchas Me'ila, Perek Vav. I mean, this is really very impressive Bekiyas over here. The Ravid in Hilchos Me'ila says the following: Kol Adam shehekdesho tachas yodo. If a person is magdish something, let's say I'm magdish this table, but it's still tachas yodo, you know, so I haven't yet delivered it, is nechshav gizbar velo mal. He's really holding on to it on behalf of the gizbar, or on behalf of hekdesh, velo mal ad sheyotzi. Achiyotzi means he has to remove it from its place. Afal pishim is kavin ligzol b'neti loso. Is hachinami kevin sheifres truma zu lavi gazlam b'neti loso. V'hilkach lo kana b'hagba. The only kidney that he can make on this truma is the achila, and at the moment of the achila, he violates a chiyuv misa b'dei shamayim. Hence, we can apply kimle b'dei ramine, at least according to Abaye. But if we're talking about a classic case of Nesina, post-Nesina, then you could say, well, there's no Kimle and Ramine because he's already chayev to pay the Kohen from the time of the Hagbah. In the case where there was a Afrasha without a Nesina, he doesn't have to pay by virtue of the Hagbah. And that's based on the Ravid, who says that it's always considered Tachas Yado, and he has to be Motzi it. Otherwise, he's not chayav. So the Afla is going to come up with a fantastical answer here, that in the case where the hafrasha took place, but the truma has not been delivered to the Kohen, there is no bialis on this truma. Hence, the whole Gemara would make no sense. Why? Because the Gemara is assuming you have to pay for this truma, and the question is, you have to pay for the truma and you ate it, and therefore you incurred a chiyuv misa. But if you're going to tell me that we're talking before the Kohen was zocha the truma, then there's no discussion about a chiyuv tashlume mamon, because the truma is not owned by any specific Kohen. So basically, this leads us to the question of what's called tovas hanah. Is there such a thing as bialis over truma before afrasha? Before nesina, after afrasha. If there is bialis, who owns that truma, Rabosai? Shevet kuhuna. So is there such a thing as stealing truma from shevet kuhuna when it's not owned by any individual kohen? That's going to be Bli Neder, a discussion for tomorrow.
Right now.
Yeah, okay. Good. I put that second page in.
Right.